You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 9 October, we've got local manufacturing production data due 1 p.m. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Jimmy Moyaha, City Lodge. Since yesterday, they've been doing fairly aggressive share buybacks. The results weren't bad, and they seem to finally be on the move. I want to get his thoughts. Casey Sprague from Anchor, an inflation hangover and the impact on the U.S. government shutdown. And then we're chatting with CFR South Africa. Money can erode our mental health, and how can you do some small things that can reduce those stresses? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb: process gold platinum stocks mask a shocking performance of SA Inc. Returns of more than and close to 200% from top performers did much to prop up the All Share Index. Business Day, the JSE's big fintech moment. Optasia planned share listing, set to bring the largest IPO ever for a fintech company to the JSE. $6.3 billion, but $5 billion of that is founders exiting. Morning markets, US was green, S&P 0.6% higher, NASDAQ up 1.2%. The East is mixed. We got Sydney down 0.2%, Tokyo up 1.4%, Hong Kong down 0.1%, and Tencent up 0.33%. Futures are mostly green. Commodities, gold futures, 4,052. Brent is the red at 65.87. Platinum is 1,684. Palladium, 1,505. The rand is 17.15, Bitcoin 122,000. Top 40 opening call, little under 300 points green, 0.3% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Jimmy Moyaha. Jimmy, appreciate the early morning time. A sense from City Lodge yesterday, talking around share buybacks and ultimately dematerializing or whatever the fancy phrase is, those shares, ultimately less shares in issue, which means everyone else's are a little bit more valuable. The results weren't bad. They had some, they're doing refurb, so there were just some rooms not available. And then I went and had a look at the chart, and it's maybe actually starting to look good for the first time in a while, although there is a lot of overhead at 5 Rand, but at 4.35, a bit to get there. Your thoughts on City Lodge? Is it finally perhaps time for this, what I want to say, beleaguered leisure stock?
Good morning, Simon. I certainly hope so. I, for one, have been looking at City Lodge for the longest time, and I've been struggling to wrap my head around why it's been underperforming in terms of the leisure stocks. When you compare it to the likes of the Sun Internationals, the Toho Suns, and granted they have other businesses like the gambling business and some of the other assets that might make them more attractive. But City Lodge has quite a wide footprint throughout the country. They are on the more affordable side from a room rate perspective when compared to the bigger peers that they compete against. But I think City Lodge's problem continues to remain the vacancies. 56% occupancy at the current levels is a lot lower than where we're seeing some of the other bigger operators sitting at the moment. And it speaks to kind of coming out of the pandemic, the recovery wasn't what we thought it would be. Now, granted, as you mentioned, from the refurbs, we knew City Lodge was going to go down this road of improving their facilities. They improved their menu. They improved all things within the business to try and make it more attractive. And that does take time. And I think we're finally perhaps getting towards the end of that time. Some of the refurbs will continue to go on, and that might continue to cause disruptions. But by and large, for a business that operates in the hospitality space like a City Lodge, occupancies become very important, because if you're not filling up the rooms, then the only way you're offsetting that is against a higher room rate, which, yes, they were able to achieve a 7% increase in the latest set of financials on that average room rate, which offset against the occupancies. But that doesn't bode well for a business that is only growing its revenues by what effectively at this point is inflationary rates, so at about 3%. So from a business perspective, I would like to see that, or I would like to think that City Lodge is in a better space now than they were coming out of the pandemic and that they've made some key structural changes. I think the timing of where we sit at the moment is quite unique with the fact that all eyes will be on South Africa come November for the G20, and that will provide a spillover effect into the likes of City Lodge. Even though we see the Tsohosans and the Sun Internationals, they will likely benefit from the bulk of the bigger bookings. City Lodge should still benefit from the travel and the tourism into South Africa. So I think the timing could potentially give us quite a bit of momentum for the stock. How we address the occupancies and the other factors that have been kind of hindering City Lodge's momentum, I think that comes down to more of management decisions and what they have been doing there. But certainly it is an interesting time to be looking at City Lodge. I'd love to see it above 4 rand 50 before I start to get any measure of confidence. We've struggled at that 4 rand level all the way down to 3 rand 50 at one stage. And for the business to come back and buy back shares using debt is a very telling sign in and of itself, because if you look at what other businesses are doing, they're buying back shares out of cash and cash reserves. And yes, City Lodge in part is doing that, but they're also using some debt facilities to do that. So they themselves are seeing that they have to do things a little bit differently to unlock some value within the business. I think if we can get occupancies up above 60%, we might be looking at a very different business, and hopefully the renovations will prove fruitful towards that.
Yeah, I take your point. And it's that occupancy, and it needs to get you get that to 60% and start moving higher, and things get real all of a sudden there. We'll leave it there for now. Jimmy Moyoha, appreciate the early morning time. Our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Is it finally time for the stock? Jimmy says he's looking for 450 to really get him convinced. What's your take? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Casey Sprake, economist at Anchor, the latest coffee table economics, although it isn't ad hoc, but it arrived yesterday. A couple of chunky bits in it. Casey, appreciate the early morning time. The first is the shutdown in the US. And I mean, you know, I've seen lots of reports that it does hurt the economy a little bit. But the bigger issue, of course, is it's shattering, for example, Bureau of Labor Statistics. You know, we didn't get labor data last week. We unlikely to get it this week. We've got CPI coming. It is, you know, the FOMC says they're data dependent. If they're not getting data, how much of a challenge is it for them?
Good morning, Simon. And yeah, that's precisely it, I would say. I mean, on one hand, obviously, we can try and refer the economic imbalances coming out of the US. But for us, especially here as market participants, the difficulty at the moment is that lack of data that's coming out of the US. You know, besides inflation data, it's the labor data at the moment that's very much a key indicator for us. And with so much focus having been on the Fed for the last couple of months, and rightly so, it's very difficult to get direction, as you stated, from an agency that is very data dependent. And it's that sort of uncertainty at the moment that I think is the real crux at issue.
You mentioned inflation then, and the FOMC minutes came out last night. I haven't read the minutes. I read the article about the minutes. But the one key point out of Bloomberg was majority of participants emphasized upside risks to their outlook for inflation. And I got to say, that is perhaps the crux of it, because there's a sense of, you know, ever since Jackson Hole, the focus has shifted to the unemployment side. But inflation hasn't gone away. And that is the contradictory, the toughness of that dual mandate the Fed has.
No, precisely that. And they're sort of working almost in contrast to each other. My worry at the moment is that the market has spent a little bit too much time focusing on the labor data and forgetting, you know, at a very high level, end of the day, the Fed's targeting a 2% inflation rate. Mm-hmm. And the U.S. economy is far from that and not showing any signs of it actually coming down. Of course, you know, we haven't seen a sort of a heavy impact from tariffs just off yet. But that kind of issue takes a while to filter through to an economy. It's not instantaneous. It takes months. And if we start seeing signs of that beginning to trickle down, and that is sort of raising the level of concern at the moment. And I haven't had the chance to go through the Fed minutes myself in detail of yet. But I do believe that the market might start growing to pay a bit more attention to the inflation again. And as you mentioned, you know, the dual mandate is difficult and sitting almost in contrast to each other. If the Fed wants to cut rates to try and boost, you know, a cooling labor market, but inflation is too high, that they sort of hamstrung on that side. It's a very, very difficult balance to walk at the moment, particularly in the Fed's case, where they're obviously getting increasing levels of political pressure as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I had somehow managed to forget about that part. Staying with inflation, but moving on a bit, the inflation of the last couple of years, and a great line you had in the piece, the price shock of the past few years has not gone away. It has merely stopped getting worse. You call it cumulative inflation, which is, in the US, maybe inflation's 2.9, in South Africa, it's 3.5. That all feels nice, but that's over the last year. If we look over the last 5 years, we've seen some real inflation numbers coming through. UK, 24%, Germany, 22%, US, 23%. These are price shocks for economies that are simply not used to that level of inflation over a period.
Yes, and I actually wrote that piece back. I'm coming off the back of a recent roadshow I did where I was engaging with a lot of clients and individual advisors. And I kept getting the same question the whole time around inflation. You know, it's all good and well that we quote this headline rate coming down at these levels. But on the ground, people aren't feeling that. You know, when they go to pay their grocery bill, they're just seeing the prices going higher and higher. And it's something I think even as economists, we run the risk of forgetting. And that's why looking at cumulative inflation is so important. So, you know, cumulative inflation would rather refer to the total increase in prices over a multi-year period rather than the pace of change in a single year, right? So that essentially captures how much purchasing power of money has eroded in a specific point of time. And the numbers I was quoting in the latest edition of COVID is coming off of 2020 as a base, obviously understanding, you know, what happened to inflation from there. And as you mentioned, you know, certain areas, even in developing markets versus emerging markets, are really seeing high prices. I mean, if you look at the UK, prices have risen about 24% cumulatively since 2020, softer than what you see in Eastern Europe, but way above their historical norms. Germany's looking at 22%, the US 23%. And then, of course, you get the rather crazier market outliers like Argentina if you move to the emerging market space. I mean, that's soared by, I think it's like, 2,164%? I mean, it's a crazy number. But to put into context, South Africa's looking at about a cumulative increase of 28%, which is also very steep.
And that tells us, and I appreciate it, all things equal, your salary has gone up by some amount, hopefully by that number, quite possibly not. It brings it back to a consumer who, I don't know, just remains under pressure. And I've been saying all of this year that our local consumer is better off than they were a year ago. Make no mistake about that. But it doesn't mean they're out of the woods. It is still tough out there. You know, our prime rate is still double digit. And we have got that cumulative inflation, which has really put pressure on household budgets over the last many years.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, again, and you know, consumers, it erodes what is your real purchasing power and your living standards at the end of the day. Even if, as you mentioned, wages do eventually catch up. And I think for South African households specifically, we're continuing to face price fatigue at the end of the day. Yeah. You know, everyday goods cost more, permanently more, always feels like it's going up. That squeezes your discretionary spending and your confidence, and it just has a sort of knock-on effects around an economy that is very sort of low on sentiment in general.
A point of the article was our local manufacturing sector. We had PMI data out, it doesn't say early in the week, I think it was last week, and it was up above 50, which is the good number. You dug into it and you say, and again, I quote you back to yourself, September's PMI paints a nuanced picture. And I'm going to take that as glass half full and say nuanced, but it wasn't all bad. And we've had a lot of PMI that's been all bad. Maybe moving in the right direction, or am I being too optimistic here?
No, I think you're on the right track. I mean, the latest reading suggests that manufacturing activity in South Africa has started to regain some traction, I think, as we head into the year end. Mm-hmm. But again, as you mentioned, it's nuanced. That recovery remains very uneven and fragile. You know, we've seen a good improvement in business activity, which I think was particularly striking within that sort of reading. But again, it's important to remember that global demand, you know, by contrast, remains under quite a bit of pressure amid also, of course, you know, all the ongoing US tariff measures and just a generally challenging trade environment. And that will continue to weigh on sort of South Africa's exports competitiveness. And I think, again, that rebound in business activity and new orders points to some resilience in our economy. And I think that could support a bit of a modest pickup into sort of the third quarter GDP growth figures. But again, you know, it's important to remember we still have persistent weakness in employment. You couple that with rising input costs and sort of waning confidence. And it highlights just how delicate that recovery within South Africa's economy remains. So yes, it is positive, and we always like to focus on the positives, but you just need to put it into context as well within the broader weakness.
Yeah, it wasn't all roses. There certainly were points there, which I suppose were the thorns. But let's leave it there. Casey Sprake, economist anchor, always appreciate the insights. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with George Corey. He's Global Head of Research and Education, CFI South Africa. George, appreciate the early morning. October is Mental Health Awareness Month, and 1st of October was also World Financial Planning Day. If we bring them together, money isn't just that sort of digital bank account or tapping your phone or credit card, or for the more old-fashioned amongst us, maybe some notes in our wallet. It is emotional and can be stressful, and truthfully can be bad for our mental health if we're not sort of on top of things. It is a real world challenge for individuals.
Morning, Simon, and thank you for having me today. At the end of the day, we're talking about money every day. Everyone is thinking about money. Everyone is talking about money, whether we're spending it, whether we have it as an income, so on and so forth. So, of course, it's pretty emotional for us whenever we have something that we need to buy, whenever we need to invest, whenever we have a loan that we need to close. And this is why it's extremely important for everyone to be prepared for anything that might come along, whether it's like something that's an emergency, so on and so forth. So you have a lot of tactics. You have a lot of strategies not to feel this mental pressure from money. However, because we don't have a lot of maybe financial literacy to a certain point globally, this is the main thing that we need to try to work on moving forward. And this is where education is extremely important, because if I'm not able to handle the money that I'm having or that I'm getting, then I'm not going to be able to handle my life properly as well.
And I like your point about prepared. I mean, good money mental health is not about being rich. Sure, we'd like to be rich, but it's about being in control. It's about, a budget. Everyone hates a budget, and it can be scary, but it gives you a reality and it removes an unknown. And a simple thing like that can maybe help you be more prepared and remove some of the stress. It doesn't make you richer, but it removes that stress from it just by sort of being in control.
This is exactly important, Simon, let's take two different individuals, for example. First individual is someone that is making a lot of income, okay? He's spending, they're enjoying their life. However, they're not budgeting properly, whether they have, like, for example, savings or investments or an emergency fund, so on and so forth. Individual B doesn't have a lot of income. However, he has his emergency fund or her emergency fund on the side. They have some investments going on, even if it's like extremely small investments. And let's put a very important, challenging choice of life in front of both of these two individuals. Mm-hmm. Most probably individual two, who has this emergency fund, who has some money on the side, who has some investments on the side, would be able to take that challenge in a more motivated manner and to be able to make harder decisions as well at the same time. So it's not about being rich, what you have mentioned. It's more about being in control, having a cushion in case you fall, that will be able to support you.
I agreed 100%. And one example, which I really, really liked from a recent note you put out, tidy your accounts. In other words, rename an account, school fees 2026. And my wife and I did it. Beginning of last year, we had a savings fund and we renamed it holiday fund. And it just took the whole pressure off, you know, the spending on holidays. It was quite clear what we had, what our capacity was. A ridiculously simple trick just made such a big difference. It is a lot of small things like that in many cases.
It does make a huge difference. And what's important here, because a lot of people don't actually do this, they don't put, like, for example, on an Excel sheet or on a paper, their budgeting, so where each dollar should be going, and they believe that this is too much stressful on a daily basis. If I want to buy an Apple, I'm going to have to put it down. It doesn't have to be that much stressful. Just put the major things that you need to have, your major expenses that you have on a monthly basis, put them on the side. Know what is your limit. Because if you don't know what the limit on this specific purchase is, you might over exceed this limit. Mm-hmm. And in this case, be taking away from another budget, putting it in that budget, which shouldn't happen. And this is where disruption happens in the financial world, as far as it goes to individuals, at least. So, of course, tidying up your expenses is extremely important, and at the same time, tidying up your investments.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, it absolutely. It's the whole ambit there. We'll leave it there. George Corey, he is Global Head of Research and Education, CFI South Africa. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. We're chatting with Shahil Matini yesterday from 91. Talking bonds, as they're not doing their typical sort of shock absorber role in the portfolio. What we're seeing post-2020, post the pandemic, is we're getting sort of bonds and equities moving in sync rather than opposite each other. We asked you, do you hold bonds in your portfolio? Almost half said yes, it reduces volatility. A third said no, they're boring. The rest of you said only in your Reg 28 investments. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Skull Clow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.